People used to call China the sleeping giant. How quaint. I'm Kurt Anderson, and in Studio 360 today, we're looking at how we in the West are starting to see a lot more of China and its culture. To get some perspective and a bit of an overview on this, I've invited Orville Schell into the studio. He is the author of 9 books about modern China, most recently Virtual Tibet. He was a journalist there for years, and he now heads the Center on U.S.-China Relations at the Asia Society in New York. Orville, welcome. Thanks for coming in.
Pleasure.
Is there a sense among the artistic class that there is something good even about having this authoritarian state apparatus to push against?
That's a very interesting observation. I think it's undeniably true that, you know, the art always, I think, gains immeasurable vibrancy when it's in tension with something. And God knows Chinese artists have had plenty to be in tension with. And it's interesting how they've mined the past. You know, they've mined all of the music of the Cultural Revolution. They've mined the iconography of Chairman Mao. They've mined, the whole experience of the Cultural Revolution in literature. Now, as the tension begins to diminish, in a certain sense, it becomes more normal and more like just art anywhere. But it also loses a kind of a critical identity. And these artists very often kind of float away into the conceptual world. And suddenly, they're not maybe as interesting, as distinguished, and as readily accessible because there's nothing that they incorporate that's resisting.
I've read about this extraordinary market with hundreds of thousands, $1 million being paid for works of art, some of it now by domestic buyers.
I mean, $1 million and more. China now has 106 billionaires.
Really?
Yeah. To be a millionaire is small potatoes. And so these people are casting around for something to do, some spiritual basis to sustain them, some sort of artistic side. And, you know, they're like rich people everywhere. What do I do with my money?
We hear the term soft power. What does soft power mean?
Soft power for China means restoring what it views as its rightful place as a culture to which the rest of the world pays tribute. And of course, for so long, it was exactly that. I mean, all of Asia paid tribute to China and borrowed Chinese culture, Korea, Vietnam, Japan. So I think it has a sort of an innate kind of, it has a recessive gene that still codes for that yearning of grandness and importance.
How are they exercising that? Are they coming in and funding institutes and foundations and things in North America?
Well, the party is sending language teachers all over the world, and they have the Ministry of Education has set up this whole sort of Confucius Institute network. And if you're some small college in Louisiana, you too can have a Confucius Institute. You just sort of phone in.
And this is something they don't just idly wish for, but sort of strategically seek.
Yes, and this is exactly what the Olympics are all about. This is for them to really plant the flag.
Is that a hugely important project to them?
It is hugely important. I mean, this is like China's coming out party, bar mitzvah, communion, you know, all rolled into one. And they are recklessly proud of what they've done. And what they have done is quite astounding. I mean, they have built an Olympic Park that is incomparable. And they have sort of redecorated the whole city of Beijing, you know, planted trees and along all the ring roads and freeways. There's amazing, you know, landscaping and buildings going up. And if they succeed, it will be a great step forward for China. But of course, there's also the risk of failure, that all of the, you know, people who for independent Tibet, environmentalists, Taiwan, Falun Gong, I mean, you name it, there are legion, the groups that would like to get in there and be heard and protest, and many within China as well. So what are they going to do about that? Well, no one quite knows.
This is a great opportunity for all of those little constituencies that want their particular form of freedom from Chinese oppression. They can use this next year, yes?
Yes. And therein lies the problem. I mean, Mia Farrow did one of the great branding triumphs of modern advertising history when she wondered out loud whether China wanted to have the genocide Olympics because of its role in extracting oil from Sudan. And then, of course, she had the second sort of most stinging branding victory when she asked Steven Spielberg if he wanted to be known as the Leni Riefenstahl of the 2008 Olympics because he was going to produce the opening night. Well, these are the kind of things that China worries about, and these are the kinds of things that can really put a torpedo through the bow of soft power.
Orvachal, thank you very much for coming into Studio 360.
My pleasure.
Orville Schell heads the Center on U.S.-China Relations at the Asia Society in New York.